Okay, so we'll continue tonight from this book that we've been reading and commenting on the past couple of Taisho, which I didn't record. I'm going to record this one. And the book is called Flowers Fall, and it is a commentary on Zen Master Dogen's work, which is a part of a bigger work, his masterwork called the Shobo Genzo. And this work is kind of a poetic statement of some very core realizations coming out of his practice. And so it's from his poem or work called Genjo Koan. Now this book here is the commentaries on the Genjo Koan by a master who died maybe, I think, 10 or 15 years ago, but he was the final teacher, and the one that gave transmission to Philip Kaplow, who was kind of a great-grandfather of this group of sitters and teachers. So Yasutani Roshi was a Japanese Zen master. He was originally, along with his teacher, Harada Roshi, and he'll mention him in this book. There may be a part of this where he'll mention his teacher, Harada Roshi. But they were both of the Soto school. So one thing I went into the first two talks was this distinction between the two remaining of six or seven schools of Zen, maybe there were more at some point, that eventually only ended up as two schools of Zen in the world. You might call them sects of Zen. One is Soto, which these two masters were from, and the other is called Rinzai, which is the one that in the West, if Zen is popularized, it's understood from the Rinzai standpoint. It's kind of this vigorous shouting and hitting and koans and flashing enlightenments and very intense interactions, which are called Dharma combat. It's a very vigorous form of Zen training. And it has many levels. It emphasizes going deeper and deeper through the use of this curriculum of koan. Now, koan is part of the name of the poem that Dogen wrote, or the treatise, Genjo Koan. So this is the literal meaning of koan in Japanese is case record. So these case records, as they are used in Rinzai, were stories, actual events, most of them. Some of them might have been allegorical, but many of them were actual events between a teacher and a student, or between two masters of Zen, and the verbal encounter and perhaps behaviors that they exhibited during this encounter express something deep about Zen truth, and also have the power, each one of them has the power, if one works properly with them, to open your mind quite a bit, to awaken you. So all of these are called koan. Now in the realm of Zen practice, there are many, many hundreds of koan, probably well over 1,000 koan. And in the course of a Rinzai student's training in Japan and also in this country now, you'll go through many, many koan before you're done with your training. Hundreds, 500, 600, 700 koan. And each koan has koan within them. And we've gone over these many times before, and as a matter of fact, the usual Taisho I give will involve a koan, or sometimes two koan. So this is just to give you the background on Rinzai. Now Soto is something a little different. Soto is a more gentle, penetrating, one might say organic approach to awakening through a form of Zazen. Its chief practice is a form of Zazen called Shikantaza. And I've defined this before. Shikantaza, the words in Japanese, Shikan, Taza. Shikan means just. It's a very important word in this practice. You'll hear it in these teshos, this word just. It's really important to get the deep meaning of this just. So shikan ta-za. So ta means hit. And za is as in zazen, sitting. So zazen is sitting zen. So this is shikan ta-za. It means just intense sitting. And that's the core of Soto practice, is just intense sitting. Now, in other Buddhist traditions, this style might be called bare sitting. In Tibetan Buddhism, Mahamudra probably comes closest to it. It's a pure form of zazen that doesn't have any particular object. So unlike breath practice, counting the breath or following the breath, or working with a koan where you are deeply questioning the essence of the koan. Sometimes that's put in this term from Chan, which is Chinese Zen, the wado, the wato. Wato is the nub of the koan. So if you're working on the koan mu, does it dogged Buddha nature? Joshu answered mu. The nub of that koan is mu, so that becomes your object. But in Shikan Taza, you have no particular object. You might say that your object is the actual moment as it unfolds before you. So it's everything happening. So your object is everything happening just as it's happening. Sometimes I describe it as plunging into the present moment because it's an intensity to it. It's not a soporific practice. This is also very, very important, and one thing that I think makes Zen practice so powerful and so unique among all the forms of meditation in the world is its intensity, its penetrating quality, its alertness and intentness, and the fact that all your senses not only are working, you even have your eyes half open, not only are they working, but they are part of the zazen. So you're not abstracting yourself from your experience, from phenomena. So now let's talk about phenomena. So phenomena are part of your practice. Or you might say phenomena are your practice. So in Shikan Taza, phenomena is your practice. Phenomena means, another way to put it is sensation. So that's the word genjo. Genjo means of your life, or of real experience, or phenomenal, or sensory. So this word genjo koan means the case record, that the koan, meaning a deep truth that isn't penetrated by your intellect, but that embodies the Buddha Dharma, as expressed in genjo, in phenomena. And that's the root of Shikan Taza. Shikan Taza is entering phenomena so intently that there is just. So that's the core practice of Soto. Now these two masters, and the one that wrote this book was the student of the Master Harada Roshi. This is Yasutani, Hakuin Yasutani Roshi, merged the two together. They felt that there were certain aspects lacking in Soto Zen. For one, because there wasn't the work with koan and the deep questioning side of things, which Rinzai is so emphasizing. Soto is more faith. It's kind of like just entering, like, just as I am, I lack nothing. And I will just shine that in each moment of my Shikan Taza. It's a wonderful, profound practice. But for people who have not had an awakening, and many people through Soto practice and Shikan Taza alone will come to awakening, but it's generally gradual and slow. Sometimes it's described as walking through mist and then realizing down the road that you're soaking wet, rather than this sudden breaking open, which often happens with koan practice. But they felt that a lot of current students and teachers didn't have this awakening experience. They felt that the Rinzai school was more authentic in that way. It held much more to this importance of awakening, which is what the Buddha not only emphasized, but was the very root of his teachings, was his own awakening. His own, you might call it, deliverance from delusion. So they merged the two together. So when you hear the comments of Yasutani Roshi, there's a funny kind of merger between the two. Dogen is Soto. So he's making comments on Dogen, but he also has kind of a penetrating way of looking at it, challenging and pointed. It's, if you read Soto literature, oftentimes it's very kind of, what would the word be for it? Bland, I guess, from the standpoint of Rinzai, it's bland. From Soto, it's truth. But when you hear Yasutani's comments, they have a pointedness to them. So what we're going to do, I'm going to pick up the book and just read the writings of Dogen on the first chapter, not go through it again, because we went through this. But I'm going to read this, and I'll also make my own comments. And I want to say something about that. That in reading this book, and I may be way too presumptuous, but I feel that the words of Yasutani Roshi, as valuable as they are somewhat culture-bound, and they are Zen-style. And I think it's important not to get caught up in that style, but to be able to be very flexible and put it in very concrete terms. So when I make some comments on this, I'm going to try to make it something that you can actually sink your teeth into and that it will be useful for your Zazen. So I'm going to read the first section of Genjo Kon by the great Zen master Dogen from the 1200s. So he writes, when all dharmas are the Buddha Dharma, there are delusion and enlightenment, practice, birth, death, Buddhas, and sentient beings. When the myriad dharmas are all without self, there is no delusion, no realization, no Buddhas, no sentient beings, no birth, and no death. Since originally the Buddha way goes beyond abundance and scarcity, there are birth and death, delusion and realization, sentient beings and Buddhas. So we went over this before. I'm going to make just a couple of comments on it and then we'll move on. So, when you read these words, they certainly sound very simple and direct. It's not kind of abstruse philosophy. It's certainly not like reading Heidegger. So one might say it's deceptively simple. Now, you could also use that to describe a book, for example. I like reading these books because they really make me stretch, but there was one, A Brief History of Time by Stephen Hawking. It's a famous physicist and quantum physicist, and he was the actual discoverer or conceptualizer of black holes. He's really famous. You know, you all know him. So he wrote this very, very simple book called A Brief History of Time. Simple in its words. He doesn't get into anything so technical that you need to have like a doctorate level training in physics. But when you read it, you don't understand it for some reason. It's deceptively simple because he's describing in very simple terms that we understand a way of looking at the world that we don't do. So there's some complexity there hidden by the simple words, and it really takes a lot of deep reading and contemplating to even slightly grasp what he's aiming at. And the book is all about relativity and time. So, you know, Einstein's discoveries, and he elaborates on them using time as one of the coordinates in space. So Whereas that is deceptively simple, the deceptively simple thing about Dogen is that it's even simpler than you think. Deceptively simple, meaning it seems simple, but it's even simpler. Why? Because the human mind is very complicated, and we live very complicated lives. And we're very involved in goals and manipulating the world to have a particular goal be more likely than another goal, because we're attached to specific outcomes. And we feel that our happiness depends upon a certain outcome, and that our worth as a human being depends on the way things work out. And Dogen's coming from a very different place. So he's coming from a way more simple place. So let's read these words one more time. When all dharmas, and once again this small d dharma means phenomena, like Genjo, phenomena, sensations. When all dharmas are the Buddha dharma, I'll just say one thing about Buddha dharma. Buddha dharma you would call the truth from the Zen standpoint. Buddha nature. So the word Buddha means the bringing together of two things into one. It's actually a pictogram in Chinese, is two sheaves of wheat tied together. So the Buddha Dharma is the standpoint of viewing the world as undivided, as single fabric. And most particularly, there's no entity standing apart from the world, that what you call me and what you call the world are actually one, just suchness, one suchness. So when we read this now, when all dharmas are the Buddha Dharma, there are delusion and enlightenment, practice, birth, death, Buddhas, and sentient beings. What? When they're all the Buddha Dharma, how could it be? He's talking about these different things. Some of them are opposites. Delusion and enlightenment is opposites. Practice, birth, death, Buddhas, and sentient beings. What does he mean when all dharmas are Buddha Dharma, there are these things? What does he mean? We could, I don't know exactly how this was translated. I don't know the structure of the Japanese from which this was translated. But what if we were to say, when all dharmas are the Buddha Dharma, delusion is, enlightenment is, practice is, birth is, death is, Buddhas are, and sentient beings are. Same words, just a little different order. So then he goes on, when the myriad dharmas, all these different sensations and entities and things and situations and desires and everything, when all of these are without self, there is no delusion, no realization, no Buddhas, no sentient beings, no birth, no death. This is familiar from the Heart Sutra. No eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind. So when the myriad dharmas are without self, what does he mean without self? So if one were to look at this watch, for example, we see this as a watch. Everybody knows it's a watch, and it's out here. It's a real thing. Real meaning it exists. It stands outside me. I put it on the floor, and I look around, it's still there, right? Well, what he says is when there is no self, when we see through the concreteness of the world and understand it as really being of the nature of mind, that the world is phenomena, sensation. Sensations don't exist without a knowingness. So when we drop the notion of solidity, all these things he listed in the beginning, which are, he's pointing at some side of them that is same. Buddhas are, practice is, birth is. It's a sameness he's pointing to. Now he's pointing at their emptiness. There is no delusion standing apart. There's no realization standing apart. No Buddhas standing apart. No death standing apart. Standing apart from what? From you. And then he says, since originally Buddha, the Buddha way goes beyond abundance and scarcity. Another way to think of abundance and scarcity is form and emptiness. So it's beyond what he first talked about, which was the individual forms presenting their beingness. They just are. So you say, just Buddha, just birth, just death. And then no Buddha, no birth, no death. He said, because the original Buddha way is beyond even that. There are birth and death, delusion and realization, sentient beings and Buddhas. And now you can just go, phew. So it seems complex, but the mind state from which these words come is preeminently simple. Preeminently simple. There is no calculation here. There's no intellection here. It is a very, very direct experience. And he's using words as best anyone can to express it in a way that is so paradoxical that your intellect just can't get anywhere with it. All right, so that's the first part of it. So I think I've caught anyone that didn't hear the two Teisho up to date, and now we're going to move on to the second phrase or words or part of this Genjo Koan by Dogen. So now he says, and remember this is all continuing from the first paragraph that I just read, he goes, yet, though it is like this, simply, this separated off by commas, yet, though it is like this, simply, flowers fall amid our longing, and weeds spring up amid our antipathy. The really famous comment from Genjo Koan is wonderful. Another way that it's been translated is, though we love them, flowers fall. Though we hate them, weeds grow. Remember this deceptively simple. Not that it's more complex than the simple words, it's more simple than the simple words. It's more simple. It's very direct. Flowers fall amid our longing, and weeds spring up amid our antipathy. You could also say, flowers fall and we long for them. Weeds spring up and we hate that. Just that. Just. How is that not Buddha Dharma? How is your very natural human reaction to events and circumstances not Buddha Dharma? You don't need to be a block of wood. You don't need to be an unfeeling robot. That's not the Zen path. So let's see what Yasutani says, his comment. So he says, here it has to be, quote, yet, though it is like this. That's his words. Here it has to be, quote, yet, though it is like this. With this, he, meaning Dogen, makes a complete turnaround. And just look at the force of his words, as if he were saying, quote, up to here it's been explanation. But from here on, I'm going to put forth the real thing. If one can't distinguish between live words and dead words, can he be called a Zen monk? In other words, the two phrases, flowers fall and weeds spring up, are Dogen Zenji's live words. When you hear them, you almost want to cry. Am I right? Though we love them, flowers fall. Think of all the flowers that have fallen in each of your individual lives. Though we hate them, weeds grow. These are live words. So simple. This is really what poetry is. And so much of Zen is expressed through poetic language, because it's not hooking into your intellect. It's hooking into something way deeper that you enter immediately when you fold your legs into Zazen. You enter that space. That's what Zazen is. So I'll go on. If you take them up in the Dokusan room, now Dokusan is the meeting between the teacher and student. We do that the third Tuesday night of each month. We have Dokusan, it's optional. But this is a critical part of Zen training, is the working with the teacher and this private meeting, which has sometimes been described as knee-to-knee, because you're both sitting in lotus facing each other, maybe a foot apart. Knee-to-knee, eyeball-to-eyeball. That's the quality of the interaction in Dokusan, particularly when you've done a lot of Zazen and you're coming in with a mind that's just so open and you don't have a lot of thoughts pulling you around. Then it's knee-to-knee, eyeball-to-eyeball. So he says, if you take them up in the Dokusan room, they make a wonderful koan. If you start to lecture even a little bit, you'll be chased out of the Dokusan room by the master's bell. The moment you begin to think about it, talk about it, intellect about it, give it some meaning. Oh, how poignant life is. Though we really, really like them, flowers fall, so we should really take care not to get attached to flowers, right? So he said, if you say that to me in Dokusan, I will ring that bell and you'll be out on your ass, basically, is what he's saying. Simply, flowers fall amid our longing and weeds spring up amid our antipathy. Antipathy. Simply. Just. It's just the way it reads. Remember what I said? It's deceptively simple. It's even more simple than it reads. It's just the way it reads. The style of Dogen Zenji's language is very elevated. So if one's Dharma eye is not a clear one, one can't easily grasp what he's saying. Because the intellect will come in and turn this into a moral. If, as a result of that, you entertain your own personal deluded views, saying things like the flower is a metaphor for enlightenment and the weeds are a metaphor for delusion, it brings you around to the absurd place of saying you shouldn't seek after the flower of enlightenment or dislike the weeds of delusion. And there are many teachers throughout history and around the world of Zen who will teach something like that. So Hakun Yasutani here is telling us to be very careful about that. So he says, quote, you shouldn't seek after flowers, dislike the weeds of delusion, and it has the negative effect of leading you into advocating an it doesn't matter Zen with no practice and no enlightenment. And this is what he and his teacher, Harada Roshi, saw happening to Soto Zen, that it gradually was becoming bland, devitalized, and people with little or no awakening were reading Dogen and then commenting on Dogen in very moralistic ways that didn't have the live words. So he says, if we simply paraphrase these expressions of Dogen Zenji, it loses its style. But that can't be helped. For the sake of beginners, let's try it. So he's going to paraphrase it now. He says, it loses its style, but I want to put it in words where someone starting out is not going to get fooled into that kind of viewpoint of, you know, don't seek after enlightenment, don't worry about delusion. Sometimes it's called, I'm trying to remember the term for it. It's a kind of Zen that has no substance to it. I'll think of it. It's on the tip of my tongue. So here's his paraphrasing. In last night's storm, the beautiful blossoms all fell off. Ah, what a shame. When it rains for 2 or 3 days and again the weeds have grown up, oh well. So that's his paraphrasing. Those who know that this is the living Genjo-kan. If you stub your toe, it really hurts. Did you expect Zazen to make toe stubs not painful or never happen? Okay, so he's kind of pointing out this fact. So he says, if you add on a discourse or make an explanation, then the living Genjo-kan dies right off. Dies. The living Genjo-kan's gone. You lose it. Now I can tell you right now that because everyone in this room does Zazen, even though it may not be abundantly clear what Dogen is pointing at, you can get on the wavelength. But the average person without this kind of training, and I'm not talking about learning how to philosophize in this way, but who doesn't start with the experience of Zazen, which, as I said before, is plunging into your present moment, they will not understand anything that was just said, just written, anything. It'll be complete gobbledygook and viewed as a waste of one's time. So he says, however, looking at several commentaries, they knock these two phrases down to the experiential level as a guide to practitioners and make plausible but specious arguments saying, even though flowers fall, don't regret it. Even though weeds grow, don't hate them. Don't arouse the passions of attraction and repulsion, hating and loving. If we only don't arouse the passions, the falling of flowers and the growing of weeds, as they are, is manifest absolute reality, Genjo-kan, end of quote. So then Yasutani puts it this way. If you look at it in that way, the first thing that happens is that Dogen Zenji's words die. Even looking at the structure of the sentences, you'd think that they could understand that it's not something at the level of a pointer for a dull novice monk. That's the end of his comments on those two lines. I'm going to read them one more time. Yet, though it is like this, simply, flowers fall amid our longing, and weeds spring up amid our antipathy. So now you can understand Shikantaza a little bit better. Sometimes in Shikantaza, something painful will come up. It might be a thought that's really troubling. It might be pain in your body. It might be a circumstance that you just can't shake. But in the solidity of Shikantaza, you can see these sensations very directly. Yes, you want them to be different, but at this moment they can't be different. They are just the way they are. They are just the way they are. And they themselves become the manifestation of truth. They are shining truth in that particular form. Pain in my knee. Troubling thought. Situation. And as we do this practice longer and longer, is very gradual, very subtle. You begin to notice that you don't react to things in the old way, which is to try to hold on to the good stuff and push away the bad stuff. You begin to get very curious about the sensations of each moment as they come. It's kind of like a childlike state. Children are very into their sensations, and they don't philosophize about them. When something happens, they burn their hand on the stove, they cry. And when someone tickles them, they laugh with total abandon. And you begin to start feeling those feelings again that you've lost for so long when you do this practice in a very authentic and devoted way. They come back because they never really died. They just got buried underneath all the things we were taught were important, which is that sensations are there not for their own sake, but for the sake of a goal that I have, a goal which is usually, must be acceptable to society, my society. And that sensations are simply a way to that goal They're like navigation points. They're not the goal itself. This is the profound, wonderful gift of this practice. As you do it devotedly over a long period of time, and if you don't already know what I mean, and I'm sure many of you do, I guarantee you, you will, if you stick with it. I absolutely guarantee you will. So we actually have run out of time, so we'll pick up the third chapter the next time, and we'll end here now.